They're jacked with Pepsi.
I'm there for the pack out. You just got to pack me in.
Committed to the bow early on. Like, I love getting close and putting up.
You cover a range of stuff on here too, right? Like,
we call this the THP world headquarters.
You know, my grandpa Roy Weatherby.
I came into like that golden little pocket where there was like four or five different bowls. Just,
you're Canadian. We're doing a Canadian podcast.
My name's Douglas Boat.
I'm Robbie Denning.
Roy Gander.
Yeah, Kelowna's beautiful. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. When's the last time you were here?
That's been a while. Like probably 6 or 7 years ago. I wanted to take my wife back there because I thought it was just such a cool place.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's probably changed a lot since you've been here. They're developing quite a bit. There's nothing but high rises going up in the downtown course. So.
I bet.
It's booming. It didn't stay a secret for too long.
Yeah, I bet. I can understand why. Like I said, I went one time and I was hooked. I'm like, gosh dang, this is a sweet place.
Yeah, there's good elk hunting around here too, and mule deer.
I bet. Yeah, it looked like it. I didn't get a chance to do any of that, but yeah, it was the guy, his name's Gord Oliver. I don't know if you know. Global Roadways, I think, was there, and Maintenance was their company name. I don't know if you see trucks around plowing or salt roads.
Yeah, I know Global, but I don't know when the guy named goes by Gord.
Well,
if I ever bump into him and be like, hey man.
Yeah, I think he moved to another. Yeah, I think he moved. I think he's still in BC, but somewhere else. He's building like, I don't know, he's working with some builders down here in my area. Actually, some other friends of mine that are down here, but he does projects up in Canada that they land, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Nice. How's the weather down where you are? Why don't you just tell the
listeners? A lot of snow.
Yeah, lots. Yeah. I always see on your Instagram that kind of looks like, well, we don't have any snow now. I think Pete.
Really?
Pete's still shoveling snow.
Just a little bit. It's mostly melted now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Springtime's close. It's like false spring number three. We'll get hammered with another storm here soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I understand that.
Yeah, it is what it is, right?
Get your hopes up and then just smack you when you're not watching.
It's actually going to be gorgeous here. It's like minus, I think, 9 for the next week at night Celsius.
Wow.
And then it's like plus 3 with the sun shining by the afternoon. Like, you couldn't ask for nicer. Well, yeah, it's that time of year. I mean, that's where the big storms can come in with those temperatures too. But it's gorgeous right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured out that as long as I don't put the shovels away, I'm good. I see it never fail. As soon as I put all the shovels away, put all the snow stuff away, change the tires over, we get another dump.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. So Kevin and then Pete, do you go by Peter or Pete?
Whatever.
Both?
Okay. Yeah. I'll answer to pretty much anything.
All right. Got it.
Anything. He'll answer to anything.
Yeah.
Are you tired of getting robbed to pay Paul? Is that... Oh, you hear that joke? I don't know.
No, I haven't.
I use the term
like
all
it.
The time, but you know, I thought, that's Peter. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know a little bit about you just because we've been chatting back and forth on Instagram and, but why don't you tell our listeners, which are, well, I think we've got about half Canadian, half American, but why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So my name's Mike Merrill and, I love hunting in the outdoors. I love being active. I like working out and exercising, trail running. I like doing anything that's challenging and difficult and building that mental fortitude, toughness in all kinds of ways. So I like to try and challenge myself with different things. But most of all, I love hunting, love archery. And I rifle hunt or shoot guns too. But bow hunting is really my passion. So been doing it my whole life and could never get enough of it probably. But so I, get out when I can.
Yeah. So where do you live?
So I live in a town called Salem, Utah, and it's about 45 minutes south of Salt Lake City. Beautiful mountain valley. I just live on a bench of beautiful mountain range next to Mount Lofer is what it's called. But it's probably 2 or 3 miles away. I like to trail run up there. And I hunt up that way too when I have tags in the area and spend a lot of time in the mountains whenever I can.
Yeah, you definitely seem like you like getting after it, that's for sure. It's funny because Pete always gives me a hard time. I like to run, and he says nobody ever runs with a smile on their face. And I sent him your link, and I was like, "Look at, see, I'm not the only guy running with a smile on my face."
And yours is fake. I can't say anything about yours, Mike, because I went through your profile, and I was like, "I got to find a running picture somewhere where he's not smiling." I can't find one. I got to bow down to this one here. My hat's off.
Appreciate that. Yeah, it's funny because people say that all the time, and they're like, "Why are you smiling?" You know, it's like, I'm just happy what I'm doing. I love it. You know,
because I have never personally seen anybody smile while they run, unless it's a fake one for like Kevin sending me a video clip or something like that. So I've been like, "You don't even look happy. I know why you're doing it, but you're not smiling either." And that proves my point. Nobody wants to run.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know what was happening. I mean, years ago, before, like, you know, I'd take selfies when I was running, post them on Instagram, but nobody's really doing the video thing, or like, you know, while you couldn't do them for whatever it was. And so, you know, trying to take a picture while you're running and, you know, keep it from being blurry and whatever else. And then once I, you know, started taking videos, and I started realizing I'd get done running and my cheeks were just so sore. I'm like, what's going on? Like bouncing from the thing. And then I realized, because I smiled about it, shook my head, I thought, oh, that's, I'm feeling that now. And I guess I was smiling the whole time. I don't even realize, I'll catch myself doing it. And I'm like, why am I smiling? I mean, I know why, but like, it was kind of weird, but that's just I am.
So. Hey man, I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. Good on you. Yeah. You seem like a guy who just lives life to his fullest, enjoys every second of it though.
Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, you know, there's a few ways to do this, and I've found that you know, trying to enjoy all of it the best you can is the best way to go about it. And you know, if you do, I always tell people I'm like 110% all in on whatever it is I'm doing. And if I'm not committed, then you know, I'm probably not doing it. And you know, if I always say if I don't want to be doing it for 5 years, I try not to do it for 5 minutes. So.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. And I'm the same way. If I'm going to do it, I'm doing it all or nothing. There's no half-assing it, and I only do the things I love to do. So,
yeah, there you go. And I've got a friend, you know, social media connection originally, but I don't know if you know who John and Jen Rivet are up your way. They do a lot of black bear hunts, and you know, they're guides up that way. I try and get out on a hunt with them next year for black bears in the spring. But anyway, kind of excited. What? You know, that's something I haven't done before up in Canada. I had a chance to hunt bears, so looking forward.
What province are you going to for that? Where are they from?
They're in BC, and I don't remember the name of the town. I just saw them at the hunting expo. I think they're actually, I thought I heard them say they were here in Utah till like April, but they work with like Traeger and Hoyt, and you know, they got a lot of sponsors and a lot of their vendors east and those folks out this way. So I think when they come down for the Hunt Expo, they, you know, make it an extended stay. And
yeah, do a bunch why not?
Of cool nice. Things. Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah, I was just curious, ahead, just because I was curious on the style of hunting that you'd be doing for your black bear hunt, just because BC we can't bait, but Alberta you can, and Saskatchewan you can. So I was just kind of curious.
Yeah, I think it may be that their hunting sites are in Alberta. I know they do a lot of baiting.
Okay. Yeah. So that would be Alberta. Some people, some outfitters do have, they've got multiple. They'll have outfits, they'll have an outfitter operation in BC and Alberta.
Yeah.
But yeah, in BC, if you're going with a guide, most likely you'd be running dogs.
Mm, I got you. And I did that last year here in Utah, got a pretty sweet bear with my bow. And I'm actually going to be doing mountain lions here, actually this month, here in just 2 or 3 weeks.
Nice.
In Utah. I've got a nephew with a company called Lone Tree Outfitters. And in fact, it's funny, I'm wearing this knock-on shirt today. He took John Dudley out after lions a few years ago here in Utah. But anyway, we'll be going out after a big tom if we find one.
Nice. Yeah.
Chasing cats is a lot of fun. It's a lot of work.
It's fun. It is. It's a lot. That's why I actually love it. It's like the last time I had a tag, I drew a limited tag a few years ago. And I think one day, in fact, I started cramping up, and I'm looking at my Garmin at the end. I think we went like 17 miles. And
holy,
I
mean,
it was just great. And there was snow all the way up to my thighs. And with the cat we ended up treeing was actually a pretty good tom, but you know, not a giant. And so he talked me out of taking him. And man, we hiked all this way, and we're not going to take him. He's like, well, we can both find you a bigger one. Well, then the next three we trained were all females. One of them was a really big female, bigger than that tom was. Actually, she was huge, but I wanted to take a female. So we just, you know, I never ended up getting one that year. So he's going to take me out again this year to see if we got my tag.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Yeah, it's hard to, when you work that hard, it's hard to pass anything up, especially a cat. Like when you get a cat in a tree, they look pretty freaking cool. So just sitting up there, totally chill, just like totally in their element, not worried about anything at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a friend that's been spot and stock hunting here in Utah for almost 10 years, like helping other people. And some of the people have been with him have gotten them when they've been together, but it was never like his turn to shoot or whatever when they had an opportunity. And he ended up killing two in like 3 days here. And it was spot stock, no dogs. One of them was a pistol, and he just saw some tracks off the road, and they went into this brushy area, like this big stump, and he didn't see any tracks coming out of it. And all he had was his pistol. He didn't have anything else with him. And so he just snuck up there close to it, jumped this cat. The cat stopped, and he shot it with his pistol. And
jeez.
It's like in 3 days, you know, he'd been going 10 years and had never got one. In 3 days, the same season, he killed two. So pretty cool.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
I tracked a couple down too this year. I already told the story, but didn't work out.
Oh, boy.
Next year.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So this year I've got an elk tag in Idaho, the county that I was able to get. I was like 17,000th in line, and I ended up at like after 8.5 hours of being in the waiting list or whatever, I got my deer and my elk tag. I actually got the archery unit that I wanted, so that was cool for deer. And then while I was on there getting my license and everything and doing the application, I ended up getting a couple wolf tags too, and then they have some reduced bear areas that I've hunted before in that area. So I've got some wolf tags, bear tags, elk and deer up in Idaho. So that
nice. Should be kind of fun this year. So are those over the counter tags?
They are. Yep.
So do you guys already do, like, have you guys already put in for your draws and stuff?
Not in the state of Utah. That's getting ready to open up here shortly. I didn't draw a bear I'm on a waiting list for bear in Utah because I got one last year on the limited entry, and then I didn't draw a cougar for being in the limited, but I did buy one over the counter. So you can do that in the quota areas, and that's the tag I'll be hunting this year. So it's just over the counter. And
then, right.
The Idaho stuff was all over the counter. You just first come, first serve on the deer and the elk, and I was fortunate enough to
get
a couple tags for my pocket.
So there's just a limited number of tags, and then it's kind of whoever.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like your place in line type of thing. Pick a number.
Yeah, and then I'm in for Arizona elk. I do have a deer tag in Arizona for this this coming fall archery. But it's like it's late. Usually like December is a rut hunt down there. So you get to take a coos or a mule deer. So I got a few tags this year. Last year, all I had three tags all year. One was my bear tag that I drew, and then I had an over-the-counter elk and deer permit in Utah, and that was it. I usually have two or three tags out of state somewhere. I just couldn't draw. I think I've been in for like 16 different animals in four or five different states, and I didn't draw anything. So hopefully this year I'll get a little lucky and draw a good tag or two besides the over-the-counter stuff. But should be a good year. I plan to get out quite a bit if I can.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed for you for sure. So do you guys have to do, how does your reporting work? Do you guys have to, like, what kind of reporting do you have to do on your over the tag stuff?
So most states do encourage, some require reporting. I always give feedback all the time. Every time that I have an opportunity, I like to help populate the data accurately. But in Utah and Arizona and some of these other places, you have to report when you draw a permit, or else they'll like fine you and like not let you put in anymore. And then you pay penalties. And so they make it painful, which I really support, like that they do that. You know, I think it's part of our responsibility to share the information so they have accurate data, you know, our results. But most of the states have some opportunity to give feedback, and but probably half require, especially if it's anything limited. Then I always have to they took a tooth on my bear. I had to check it in the fishing game. On elk or deer, in a limited entry unit, especially elk, you have to send in a tooth and, you know, do some things to help with your feedback and report. So
That we have, like, there's some compulsory inspection animals for us up here as well. Yeah. But they just started this year doing, if you go online, you can fill out for each tag that you bought, you can fill out if you're successful or not.
Nice.
So I did mine. Pete, did you do yours?
Fuck off.
Uh-oh. Oh, yeah. Okay. But
yeah. Why is that? Why didn't I do it?
Well, your wife, she must have filled it out because she did all the killing in your family this year.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Wow. He's throwing it down now.
Oh, he is. He knows that. I gotta wear it though. It is what it is. It's she got a moose tag this year.
Wow, nice.
So for us, that's all LEH. And around here, it's a weird system up here. So when you get it, we've had it twice in, I'll say, 5 years. And normally it's like a once in a lifetime draw.
Oh, wow, that's great.
So I'm not gonna complain,
right?
But you never know. If you get it, it's I pretty much gave up all my elk hunting. Everything was for 100% on this tag. Sure. I think I got like 3 or 4 days of elk hunting in the first couple of days of archery season, and that was it. Yeah. And then, yeah, I ended up helping her get, she got a beautiful bull moose around here at 15 yards with the crossbow.
It's amazing.
And it tastes pretty good. except she consistently tells me that she doesn't know what I bring to the family anymore because she's bringing home the bacon,
providing all the
doing everything out. I have to just eat crow, and yeah, you did a wonderful job, honey.
She kills it, cooks it, she does everything. Yeah,
he we'll just bring back it. Some crow and say, here you go, this is my part.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah,
I actually I've got 23 points for moose here in Utah, which there's a unit or two I could draw, but the one that I've been putting in for takes like 24-25, so probably a point or two behind the curve, and hopefully the next few years I'll catch up and maybe draw a permit finally. But it's once in a lifetime here in Utah as well. These are Shiras moose.
Yeah, same as here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's a lot of points you need.
Yeah, I'll be hunting with my bow too, so I got to be on my game. And our season's not very long. It's like, I think it might be like 10 days or something.
When is it? Is it during the rut by chance?
It's in the fall. It is, I think, October usually. So
okay,
there's some pretty good. I know where to find the moose usually, but yeah, with archery, that's kind of a risk. So we'll see how it works out. Hopefully I could get it done quick and not have all the pressure.
Yeah, no doubt.
How long you been flinging arrows?
I started bow hunting when I was probably 26 or 27, just loosely. They had a program here where you could hunt, you could like do service hours, and they call it dedicated hunter program in Utah. And they let you hunt, you pay extra. And then you basically can tag 2 deer in a 3-year period. You can pick which years. Like the first year, usually you're just looking for something really nice. And if you find it, great. If not, then you're not totally bummed out because, you only take 2 deer in the 3-year period anyways. And so as soon as that program came about, I joined that and bought a bow because I, just wanted to hunt more. Before that, I was only a rifle hunter. I mean, I didn't grow up bow hunting or never really had any experience. Nobody really mentored me. So just kind of had a father-in-law and brother-in-law that were into bow hunting a bit. So I just kind of learned a little bit from them and kind of hacked my way through it. But once I really started doing it more, I found a lot more passion for it. Found like it was a lot more challenging, but also a lot more rewarding when you're successful. So feels like it's a lot more up my alley. And mm-hmm. and so yeah, it's been I'll be 50 this year, so I've been
Wow, you're 50?
Yeah.
Oh, good on you, dude. Wow.
Good on you.
Yeah,
I'm a grandpa. So
no shit.
yeah, I've got a 2.5-year-old grandson, and I was 23 when I had my first, and
she was same as Pete,
probably there. 23, yeah. I think, or so when she had her 24, maybe.
That's exciting too, because you're young enough, you're fit enough.
Yep.
You're going to get to enjoy, enjoy your kids with all that energy too.
Yeah, I'm going to teach your grandkids with all that energy.
That's still awesome.
Be able to participate heavily.
That's wicked. I love it.
Yeah. I got a granddaughter that's going to be born here in just about 3 weeks. So super stoked for that. That's with my son, who's my second child. I have 4 kids and 3 daughters and a son. So yeah, I'll be a grandpa twice now here.
Awesome.
In a few weeks.
So you had a busy go at it. Yeah, I have 3 at home. The youngest turned 7 here on Saturday. So
wow, okay,
they're still young.
Yeah,
I'm 44, so I started late,
okay,
later than you two, anyway. But I mean, yeah, I did. What's late? I mean, I got a cousin who started when he was 48, and like he says, better late than never.
Cool. There you go. Yeah, you could do it.
We'll see once they get the teenage years. Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm heading in. Not there yet, but it's coming close, and you can already start to see it. Like, hey man, where's your brain?
Yeah.
So Kevin and Pete, do you guys ever hunt down here in the States at all? Do you guys ever get down this way?
No. Get invited down there lots, but
yeah, sure.
It's pretty tough. I mean, I hunt a lot in the spring. I hunt a lot in the fall. And then like in British Columbia, we could just go down and we can buy over the counter sheep, goat, elk, moose here. Like,
why would you come down here?
we can buy pretty much anything we like. So, it's tough. I'd love to come down there. It's just, usually I hunt pretty hard. And then usually by the end of December, I'm pretty, pretty burnt out. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. But then, you get back on the horse and you're counting the days till April 1st and bear opens again. So, but
yeah, if honestly, you can wear yourself out doing what you love, that's fantastic.
And honestly, our tags are cheap compared to pretty much everybody else, like what we pay for ours.
Yeah, too cheap, I think. Well, yeah,
I'm not going to complain.
Plenty cheap, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, well, 25 bucks for an elk tag.
Wow.
I think it's somewhere in there.
It's our application fee, almost.
Yeah. We have a little, but like you guys, I mean, the way our wildlife is managed up here is it's pretty gross. There's not a lot of money, not a lot of that money that's going back into the wildlife management. So if we started paying $100 for tags, we better see some serious improvement on how much money and how much funding is going back into wildlife management. Cause I know out of the hundred, when I talked to Kyle, who's he's not the seating president, but he used to be the president of the Wild Sheep Society up here. And he said in BC, it was like $119 million the provincial government got, or $119 million they received in like licenses, fees, and all that stuff that sportsmen put in. And they put like $8 million back into the resource.
Wow.
Geez. Spread over everywhere.
Over everywhere, right. Over our province. So, and you think probably of like the 10%. Size of, yeah, you think of the size of British Columbia. I mean, you're putting, you know, Washington, Oregon, Utah all together just to equal the size of BC and $8 million, and like you think like what is one of your states put into its into wildlife, like, but I mean, you know, you guys have different, you got a lot more people down there, and also you got the great access to like the Pittman Robertson Dingle Johnson Fund, which federally matched, so that helps a lot. But yeah, I don't know, something needs to happen, hopefully.
Yeah,
how's your predator control up that way?
It is, our predator control is really a political issue like everywhere else. Yeah. I mean, obviously up here, we've got tons of wolves, we've got tons of cats, we've got tons of grizzly bears, tons of black bears. And it's just, it's a political issue. The interior caribou herd took quite the beating just with overlogging and predators and just like, you know, human encroachment on the landscape. So, and global warming too, right? Like the way our climate's changing. Yeah, so they took a big tumble. So I mean, there is a wolf call going up in the northern part of the province, but I mean, I don't know how effective it is. I haven't heard. They kind of keep that locked up. They don't like talking about it too much. So I don't know. Have you heard much about that, Pete?
A few years ago, when I went to the BCWF conference up in Fort St. John, there they had a couple biologists and stuff talking about that. And it was specifically on the caribou recovery and the wolf call that was happening at that time. And all the science pointed to it was helping overall with calf retention and all that kind of stuff. But it was an astonishing number as to how quickly they can repopulate. Like you have to take out, I believe it was above 86% out of a pack's numbers.
Knock them down.
Just to put a dent in them. Otherwise, if it's less than 86%, they have 100% recovery the following year.
Yeah, multiple litters a year. I mean, they just
They're dogs. They can have tons and tons of animals, and as long as the food's there,
and a pile of them in every litter. And,
So
it's, and they don't have any predators other than humans.
Right. Yeah.
And they're smart. If we're
not controlling them, nobody's going to.
Oh, it's, yeah. Smart. So it's what they did?
Go ahead,
Pete. I was just going to say. So what our genius government did is they come up with this predator prey reduction program. So instead of killing the wolves, they figured they'd kill the moose to save the caribou.
Jeez, that's nice. Wow.
Yeah. So they're this way they won't, you know, there's no political backlash with having to cull, because a lot of people that are in our major cities who, you know, they never step outside a major city. They're kind of removed from the outdoors and the out and, you know, wildlife. So they have no real connection to it. And they really have no idea what's going on actually outside their front doorstep. But their votes, right? Votes count.
Yep.
So, they figured if they knock down the moose population, the wolves will starve and the caribou herd will be able to recover. And they figured, moose are resilient; they'll just bounce back. But there's a lot of variables that they're not taking into consideration. You know, if they're taking data from 1960, our landscapes changed a lot in 1960.
Yeah, like sure.
We're a huge producer of lumber. For not just British Columbia, but for North America and overseas as well. So,
I'll say.
Yeah. So there's not, you know, the landscape looks a lot different than the data they might be looking at. So I don't know, but I again. This is our genius government we're dealing with.
Yeah, we call it ballot box biology. It's like marketing, you know. Just put a picture of something sad happening, you know, somebody shooting a bear, or, you know.
It just seems like they don't want to go to the root causes of everything, because a lot of the root causes, you can just follow the money trail. And the money trail feeds these big corporations. And I'm prologuing our whole valley here, you know, like, but there's a way to do it.
Yeah, responsible logging.
And I think one of the biggest things for pressuring animals and stuff like that is not decommissioning roads properly. And I'm not talking about a stupid ditch that you can't get through with your pickup. I'm talking make it natural again, because that's how the caribou and the moose escape. They get high up. They get into that deep snow where the wolves aren't going, or not as often, because they have to use so much energy to get to the top of the mountains. They're only going to do that so much. And this was actually by the biologists too, that we're talking about this in the caribou recovery. But when you have all these roads, they're highways, easy highways to get to the tops of the mountains virtually. So these wolves can make multiple trips up and down with very little energy. And I'm not just focusing on wolves. I'm just using them as an example. Anything, cats, it doesn't matter. They can all use these highways to the tops of the mountains, very little energy used. And now they can target these big animals where normally they're anywhere able to hide up there. And no different than people too. People are able to get into areas they were never able to get to before. And the animals used to hide in there. They used to calf in these areas. And now they're stressed out. So, you know, now you come down to calf retention and all that kind of stuff. And it's a huge issue, but there's, you know, they don't want to do that because that costs money. They might need that road again later down the road to strip the other half of the mountain off. So stuff like that, like they're not actually fixing the root causes. They're just throwing band-aids up until the next election, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's never long-term thinking. It's always short-term thinking.
Well, go ahead, Mike. They're really not even looking at the problem. They're worried about politics. Yeah, it's just politics. Somebody's given them an issue, given them a problem, and they're giving, like Mike said, a band-aid fix to make them look good. Like, oh yeah, we're aware of this problem. This is our answer. This is how we're solving it. And we're also doing extended research on it. But no, they're not, right? It's just fuck off and go away politics. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's very true. I know here in Utah, we don't have grizzlies and we don't really have wolves per se. Nobody will go on the record and say we have any, but that's debatable whether they've made it here or not from Idaho. But the black bears, I've got my older brother went down with a neighbor of his. It's the big game coordinator for the state of Utah. And they were putting in planting chips in pregnant cow elk. And then they would go on and get samples and check the calves when they drop them. And, you know, many times they'll find, you know, black bears just waiting around for that cow elk to drop that calf, and they just jump right on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, take them before they even have a chance. And I know, you know, up in your area, the bears are just murderous. All those moose calves, they're just the same thing. Like they can smell and tell when they're getting ready to drop a calf, and, you know, they're just waiting around.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The bears, and we've got tons of black bears. We got tons of grizzly bears, not nearly as much as we used to, but when it comes to predators, it seems like everything else, the numbers are going down, but the predator numbers seem to be going the opposite way of the ungulates.
Yeah, man doesn't control them then.
Yeah. And the black bear, I mean, like, I know a lot of people, myself, we're allowed two black bear tags a year, and I hunt two black bears a year. Most of the time I get two black bears, but I mean, not everybody hunts black bears. They have no interest in them, right? There's this idea going around that the black bear meat's no good.
It's amazing table fare. I've still got a little bit left in my freezer. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Everybody that I introduce to black bear, they're just blown away by how good it is. They don't believe me. Yeah. They're like, well, I can't believe it.
And my wife works for an oral surgeon, and I was telling him about it. Oh, he wanted to have some. So they had this little cabin retreat they did for an employee to kind of get together. And I brought some up and we smoked it on the Traeger and I brought some elk, and then they had some beef and all that. And I'm like, I'll do all the meat, you know, get it all prepared and served it up. And man, like the black bear meat disappeared before everything. I mean, they were all like, that's like some of the best meat I've ever tasted. They couldn't believe what it was, but I said, yeah, telling you, it's amazing.
Yeah it's funny. My dad has never had an interest in shooting bears and like moose and everything, no problem, but And I don't, he's always just said, oh, the, I, but even like, I remember when I used to go hunting with him when I was a kid, and they were just like, no, we, the meat's gross and they carry worms and blah, blah, blah. I mean, yeah, they do carry worms and, but that's, yeah. I mean, it, you just got to cook just it
take
properly.
Care of properly, prepare it properly. I have no,
yeah. I mean, it's no, no different than whatsoever. Pork.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no yep. different than yep. pork.
Trigonosis. Or, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah. You but. Cook it right. You kill it right out of there.
Yeah. How about cougar? Have you ever had cougar?
Yeah. It's fantastic. Also. It, so it tastes kind of like pork, but it's, I mean, it's a little sweet almost. I mean, I actually, I love it. It's yeah. really good, but not a lot, lot of meat on those things, but yeah, it's really good.
No, there's not. And it's
I
funny,
will be but, eating this cat that I get. Absolutely. Yeah,
when you pull the hide off, it's funny how much they shrink.
Yeah, you're like, not a lot of, yeah.
Crap, that thing got small all of a sudden.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. The yeah. hide's bigger than the hide head or bigger than the rest.
Yeah. If you get one, are you going to, what kind of, are you going to do a mount with it or just do a rug?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did a rug with this bear. I don't quite have it back yet, but yeah, I'll do a mount. I don't know. I may do a full body. I'm not quite sure. Just trying to decide still, but yeah, I'll definitely mount it.
Yeah. Yeah. The full, I think, I feel like if you're going to do a mount, you kind of, with a cat, you kind of have to do the full mount.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some cool mounts I saw at the expo and, you know, seen around, but that'd be kind of fun to got to find a place to put it right. Right place in the house.
Yeah.
Without having my wife give me grief every time she looks at it.
I got a full mount cat. So as soon as you walk in our front door and you turn your head, there's one sitting right above
you.
Yeah.
Huh?
It's just sitting there looking down at you.
Keep but. The intruders out, right? You need battery powered eye lights, you know, get yeah. the green going.
Yeah, we get, like, you walk into my front entrance, yeah, we definitely get some looks by some people, because you walk in and there's a couple deer, a caribou, and some sheep all sitting there, a goat, wow. right at the front entrance, and they're like, nice. What does the rest cool. of the house look like?
Well,
it looks the same.
I'll have to come check it out when I get back up to Kelowna.
Yeah, when you come up, bring your bow up, and we'll go shooting.
Oh, man, I'd love that.
Yeah, it'd be great. Fun. So what kind of bow are you shooting?
So I shoot Hoyt. I have an RX-5 right now, but I got an RX-7 ordered that should be here in the next few weeks. So I'm super excited to actually won a bow at the Hunt Expo
nice.
At the Mule Deer Foundation banquet they had. So that was awesome.
Yeah.
And they let me upgrade that, nice. Pay a little extra and get some stuff for it. At Hoyt with
that's cool.
So very excited to have that RX-7.
So are you going with the Ultra?
Yeah, yep, the Ultra 34. I have a 31.5-inch draw, so
okay,
I'm only like 5'11", but I have long the gorilla arms, I guess. So
yeah, it happens. My brother, he's like, I don't know how tall he is. I'd say 5'6", but he'll get pissed off at me. He's like 5'8" or something. But he's got
give him 5'7".
He's got I got a 29-inch draw length, and he's got the same draw length as me.
Really?
And he's like, yeah, and he's like 4 inches shorter. It's hilarious. But yeah, he's just
wow. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. I mean, I've told this story a couple times before, but I was up at Wayne Endicott's. He owns the bow rack up there in Springfield, Oregon. And I was up at an elk-shaped camp with Dan Staten in Oregon this last summer. And I was up there shooting my bow, and I had him build me up some arrows. And he says, let me come watch you shoot. So I'm over there shooting. And he's like, you look a little hunched up. Oh, really? And he's like, yeah, dude, shoot another one. I do. And he's like, your draw length's longer than what you're set for. Really? Like, no, I'm a 30-inch draw length. And he's like, no, you're not. And I said, really? How much? And he's like, it's a bit. I mean, it's probably an inch or more. I'm like, serious? So he goes and puts it on the press and does, you know, adjusts everything and moves it to 30 and a half. And he's like, oh, still bunched up. And then he goes to 31. Then he got a 31 and a half. And he's like, oh, okay, there you go. Yeah. Now you look good. And so for, you know, just this whole time, I'm telling you, shooting a bow for, you know, 20 something years already, 23 years. And I've always been a 30-inch draw length in my mind. And I've never had anybody tell me any different, any bow shop I ever went to. And, but immediately, I mean, it really, you know, pretty fair shot before that, but really brought those groups in more consistently.
Nice. Yeah.
Now I feel great when I shoot. I don't feel like I'm getting in a baseball stance or anything funny. I just get nice and relaxed and everything feels super natural. And
yeah. So, it must have been hard on your front shoulder too, I imagine, sitting there.
Yeah. That's true, actually. And I used to get a little sore because I, you know, shoot thousands of arrows a year, shooting a lot, you know, and at times it starts to get a little sore. Feel like you're shooting too much or something, but I haven't had any of that shoulder pain since I adjusted that probably.
Yeah, there's the fine line where it's got to be, and I tell people all the time, it's got to be, you don't want to be too long, because then you're going to hyperextend your arm.
Yep.
You don't want to be too short, because then your shoulder's going to be crunched in, and
yeah,
you're not going to be square to your bow. Yeah, there's a fine line. You got to really narrow it down, and
I think everywhere I had been, had I really, insisted that somebody look a little closer, or had I analyzed it or videoed it, or I didn't know any different, and nobody ever said anything.
Yeah.
You know, they measure arms, they go through this stuff, but you know, which hole on your, I shoot a trigger finger,
wrist strap. Yep.
And depending on which one you buckle it on, I mean, you could change it an inch just right there. And that was the other thing. What I was doing is I was extending it out to like the last loop. And he's like, oh, you don't want to do that. You know, get it nice and tight, comfy, and less play. And let's just fix the draw length and it'll be more natural. But it's amazing what a difference that's made to bring those groups in. So, great recommendation for everybody to really double check that and make sure that you're really, truly.
That's what's nice about the new bows now is you can actually, all you have to do is you just take a Torx head and you just, unwind the module a little bit, and you can just, let me rephrase that. Some bows you can't, some bows you got to change the mods, like on the Mathis, you have to change the mods, which is nowadays is super easy, but like on the Hoyt system, man, it's super easy to change your draw length. And now they have the built-in string stops on the module. So
I saw that. Oh, that's something, huh?
Yeah, so now you don't have to deal with that. But I remember, when I first started shooting, I was constantly changing. I was like, let's try 27. I'd shoot that for a while, and then, the next year I'd be like, 28, and then like, no, and then you go to like 29, and I went like between 28 and a half and 29. I went through the most, just trying to feel endless. Like, if there was a 28 3/4, I'd probably be money. Yeah, probably be right bang on. Yeah. But you definitely want to make sure that you got the right draw length, and it's tough. It's kind of a trial and error process, because even if they measure you up, it all depends on what kind of release you're shooting, where you're comfortable, and everybody's different. That's kind of one of the neat things about archery is it's custom to each shooter.
I guess that's one of the other person could do too is if you're feeling sore in any area, like especially if you're new to archery or something, or even if you've been shooting a long time, so there's that aspect. But if you are getting shoulder pains or anything like that, maybe try to find an experienced person or video yourself from different angles and see if there's something in there that obviously you can't see, but maybe it's a situation kind of like you, like all of a sudden it's like, I don't quite look loose and relaxed there. I wonder why. Maybe it is something as simple as that. And that's why you're getting some pains, just because you're compensating pressure somewhere else.
Yeah, that's the operative word, that compensating. And that's what I found the same thing. Even after he adjusted that, I was a big baseball player. I loved baseball, played softball after that, I almost felt like I was getting in a baseball stance, like my legs are, wide apart. And I'm kind of hunched, just an unnatural look. It's like, and that's what Wayne Endicott said. No, relax, just stand there. Just stand there normal. All right, okay, pull your bow up, stare at the target, look where you're going to shoot. Just take it in, think for a second. And it was very interesting to go through that regimen and those steps versus what I was doing before. And at the same camp we had, which I don't know if you all have had a chance to shoot with Joel Turner or studying of of the Shot IQ stuff, but man, big shout out to Joel Turner. He's got a program that's pretty cheap, a lot of online stuff, and it's amazing. It absolutely changed my accuracy and my shot process. He calls it Shot Blueprint. Mm-hmm. Just coaches you on how to go about taking each shot. I was punching my trigger too, and I didn't know I was. He videoed it right in front of me, and I watched the same video next to him, and he's like, see, you punched it. I'm like, no, I didn't punch it. That's how you do it, He's like, no, how you think you're supposed to do it is the definition of punching it. So yeah, you learned, you've been punching the trigger for 23 years. And I'm thinking, wow, really? So then with a little bit of education and then watching that back and then practice, it's like all of a sudden, same thing, like those groups just shrink right in. And you're not feeling like you got to hurry and, punch that trigger because, your sight's where you want it. And, calmness and control, breathing, just those things that seem like it's pretty simple when you're standing in the backyard and in flip-flops or you're at the range, but when you're out on the mountain, you know, and it's, and the weather's there, and you've been hiking and you're hot, and there's pressure and your adrenaline's going, like, you can't afford to have all that stuff going through your mind. You need to have that shot blueprint dialed in so that you can execute. You know, you work all year for this perfect shot, or maybe it's a once in a lifetime tag. I mean, you just can't allow yourself to mess up, you know, that kind of an opportunity. So
I'm a firm believer too. I mean, everybody's got a phone now. You can buy, you can prop it up on anything. I'm a firm believer in filming yourself and analyzing it, even little things. Not doesn't even have to be major things. Could just be like your hand, like literally focus in on your hand. And that's it. But I think the biggest thing is a person has to be open to the fact that there's, most of the time, there's a little something that can be done or changed. Otherwise, you'd be Robin Hooding every single arrow. If you were doing everything perfect every single time, that's what would happen, unless there's something mechanically that went wrong. But most of the time, that's not it. Most of the, you know, like one after another, you should be banging them off each other. And if you're not, so there's something that needs to be tweaked or fixed, or, but you have to be open to not blaming your equipment. It's probably you more than likely. So that's a big thing.
Yeah. And if it is your equipment, then you got to fix that too. Like that's, you got to dial that in. And then once you've got that solidified, then you know it's you. Like,
It's hard. It's complicated though, especially for guys that are new to it, you know, not just your draw process and your shot execution, your bow, how it's set up. Is it set up properly? Is this the right bow for me? Am I shooting too much weight? Am I shooting the proper arrows? Like, it's so involved. And like, if you don't know, and if you don't have someone there that can help you with it, it's really hard. It's really, you know, it's really challenging. And you can go on for years and just, you know, just be doing, like you said, with your draw length, it could be wrong. You don't even know it. And then when you know, all of a sudden you get it right, or somebody shows you how to do it right, then all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, this is amazing. And then you're like, well, damn it, I wish I would have known this 15 years ago, because it might have made a huge difference.
Archery's hard as it is. You don't need to make it any harder on yourself.
That's
right. You can help it. So you got to control those variables. But in this day and age, like you say, with the technology and, you know, the great, you know, cameras we got right in our phones and little stands you could buy for $20 on Amazon to, you know, set everything up and figure it out, slow-mo, and all the things. And I always fill up my iPhone. I have a 1 terabyte iPhone. I just fill it up with videos, stuff like that, right? Slow-mo and shooting my bow, you know, 3 or 4 times. But it's amazing what you learn, and you just would have no idea you're doing unless you really watch that close enough.
And the access is good now. I mean, there's so much stuff out. I mean, Keelan's got so much great stuff. John's got so much great stuff out there that, and I mean, there's tons, right? There's just, it's so accessible where you can just go on Google basically and Google proper archery form and then watch a million videos on it. I mean, of course, everybody's going to have something different to say, but just, you know, watch them all and use your best judgment.
Yeah, and they say, you know, you hear probably since we were kids, you know, practice makes perfect, and it's actually completely inaccurate. Like, perfect practice makes perfect. You know, you have to practice properly. You're better off shooting 3 perfect arrows the right way than shooting 30 the wrong, because now you got to unwind that muscle memory, and that you're, you know, you fall into those old habits. And so you got to get rid of those and work through those kinks, and then be very, very diligent on executing. That's one of the things that Joel Turner continues to say in everything he teaches, is that you have to have enough control in that shot that you can stop at any moment and not release the arrow. Like, you could, like, a split second before, you could decide this isn't the right shot and stop. Yeah. Otherwise, if you can't stop yourself, then you didn't have control, and you weren't prepared to release that arrow with confidence and feel like it's going to hit where you want it.
Man, it's funny you say that. I got a work colleague a couple weeks ago. He was over here. He brought his bow over. He hadn't shot in a while. And so I put his bow through the press. I fixed his timing. Had a bit of cam lean, so I fixed that. And like, he was shooting arrows that were just the wrong arrows. He's shooting like a 200 spline arrow off the 60 pounds. And he's got 28 inch draw. And it's like, dude, this is bad. So like, I set them all up. And then we go into the front. And it's like, hey, let's put some points in a target here. And right away, I was just like, oh, dude, we got everything you're doing. Forget all that, right? Like, let's start from scratch. Start from your footing, right? Like, he's a right-handed shot, and he had his left foot probably a foot in front of his right foot, right there's in front of his right foot, and like just his shoulder was crunched down and his arm was hyperextended, like just, and he's like, oh, this is how I've been shooting. And he's like, my dad shoots the same way. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll tell you what, let's forget everything you just, but the problem is like we shot for a whole day and then we shot again. And it's like he was good. Like at the beginning he was shooting, and then we got him out of those habits and we got him set up properly, like how his proper form should be all the way from his grip to his anchor. And then 2 days later comes back and he's like back to his old habits. And like you said, though, it's so hard to get out of those habits once you have them.
It's
worse. Like that's why I always tell people right away, I'm like, if you get a new bow, find somebody that can teach you how to shoot, because the hardest thing to do is to forget. It's harder to forget bad habits than it is to learn good habits, especially with new archers. I'm like, you're better off waiting. Even if you buy a bow and you have to wait a month, I know you're excited to shoot it and do anything, you're going to be better off in the long run waiting for somebody who can help you with your process of shooting. Cause trust me, you're going to end up shooting this bow. You're going to develop all these bad habits, and then you're going to spend the next 6 months trying to forget all the bad habits you just learned. And you're going to end up right back where you would be if you just waited.
It's like golfing, right? When you have a crappy swing or your form's just terrible, or baseball or anything else, but like, especially golfing, to me, it's like, it's worth it to work through that pain of swinging properly, getting to the point where, you know, you're spending all this time, you're spending this money, you're spending this effort, especially when you're hunting. I mean, it's so hard as it is to get at bow range of these animals that are switched on and fired and all their senses are, you know, on point. And you've got to get every single advantage you can. And so when it comes down to that crunch time, like, you just have to have that stuff dialed in, because it's nearly impossible. As 10% success is, you know, on the high end with archery equipment, it's like you don't have a lot of leeway here to mess up. So.
No, it's definitely hard. You don't need to make it harder on yourself, that's for sure.
And then the mental side is even worse. If you're physically not doing things appropriately, where you can have confidence, then your brain's gonna, it's gonna implode anyways. Right?
Yeah, exactly. If you're not confident with your shot execution, then forget it. Stick to the rifle until or put more arrows down range, practice a little bit more. But you owe that to that animal anyway. Sure. I mean, it's part of our responsibility as ethical hunters is to make sure that we're putting in the time to make an ethical kill. Nobody wants to wound one and be tracking it. I mean, it happens. Don't get me wrong. It happens. Even, man, I've done it. I've shot tons and tons of arrows, and it's just one of those things. Sometimes it happens. But it could happen with anything. It happened with a rifle. It is what it is, right?
Yeah, you don't. I mean, I've hit animals where I thought it was perfect, and you like it hit a bone, did something ribbed, did something glanced somewhere. You just have to broadhead fail if it's expandable. I mean, you don't always know as it is. You have to take every precaution you can to get all of that as right as possible. And there's still going to be challenges like that. So,
absolutely. Oh, yeah. So, dude, I got to talk to you about this cold tubbing.
Oh, okay. I wonder if this might come up.
Okay, explain it to me. I'm sitting there watching you jump. Like some of these times, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, and you're jumping into this tub. First, you're breaking the ice off with it, and you're dunking in 9 minutes you're in there?
Yeah, 9 or 10 a few times. I mean, I've been, something like that, 8, 9, 10 minutes.
I showed my wife the video. I'm like, dude, look at this. Look at this crazy guy. Look at him. And she's like,
he's got a smile on his face.
You can say it. Look at this idiot.
No, I'm like, look at this guy. He's crazy. And she's like, why? I'm like, I have no idea why. I don't know. There's got to be a reason to, because he does it every day. Yeah. So you got to tell me about it.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, Wim Hof or Dr. Huberman or ECP, Cam Haynes has been doing it for a while. Joe Rogan talks about it all the time. There's a lot of people out there that have learned, college athletes, people that I know and have known for years. I mean, that was a part of their recovery or their training was, sitting in a cold tub. And so I just decided this year, I'm like, you know what? I mean, I have a hot tub at home, and I just have this routine. If I'm doing like a lift session or some kind of CrossFit circuit that I do, or if I'm on a trail run, when I'm done, I like to come back and sit in the hot tub and try and get my muscles to relax and once I started, I got a hot tub, I don't know, a few years ago, but almost immediately, as soon as I started using that as a part of my recovery, I was way less sore. I just felt a lot better. And then this cold tubbing is a whole other level of more of that. And so there's a few things about it. The first thing is it actually really can help boost your immune system. So it helps your body build up greater resistance to those things that might get you sick. So that's an interesting byproduct. I don't get sick almost ever as it is. I'm pretty healthy generally, but that's one thing. Second thing is you feel like you are, I mean, it's so crazy to explain, but like you feel so fresh and alive. And I always say this, you feel like frisky, like you're like, oh man, you know, like you just have this boost of energy after you get out of this tub. And so I thought, man, this is like pretty cool. And then you feel like you're ready to take on the day, like mentally, you feel cleared out like that. Meditation, you know, people that are into that or not, like yoga, whatever. I find that when I'm in that tub, even if I'm talking into my phone or recording a thing that I'm going to post up, it's like you just get this clarity that like you can't get. I don't get anywhere else, and so that's very healthy. It's very mentally tough. Like I find myself avoiding it, like and putting it off. Like I'll waste 20 minutes sometimes. You know, when I'm going to get in, my wife's like, "Are you done?" I'm like, "I've got in yet." Oh, you're still delaying. I'm like, I don't mean to, like but really, yeah. If I'm honest, like, yeah, some.
I gotta let the dogs out. I gotta do something. Oh, I gotta go to work. Right?
Sorry, yeah. Well, not today.
Yeah, but truly, I'm so far past that now. Like, it's not scary. Like, there's. I don't feel like I'm in danger. Like I eased into it. I did a lot of research, you know, I want to be super careful. Like I don't want to have a heart attack or something crazy, you know, because of this. So, you know, I built it up to where, you know, I know those limits. The water I'm in is pretty cold. Like it's excessively cold for what you would need it to be. Like they say,
fuck dude, you're sitting there with a sledgehammer and you're breaking it up. Right, yeah. Before you're going in, like that. Okay, yeah, that's
it's been like 35 degrees usually, which is
that's what Pete is fishes in. When Pete busts the ice, he's sticking a lure down in the bottom. He's sitting in a nice warm shack.
I'll be drinking like, a bit. It's freaking cold here. Let me out.
Yeah, right. And he's complaining it's cold. He's got his Carhartts on. He's probably drinking a Carolines and coffee.
Oh yeah, you know it.
Yeah, so I've found a lot of, so I've worked through this to where it's like, okay, I have this routine now where, you know, I know how it's going to feel. I know what to expect. There's no surprise. I'm calm. I don't lose my breath. I mean, half the time I get a little shivery here and there, but sometimes I'm not even shivering. Like my body just knows how to deal with it. And so I've also found it's like, once I've done that, especially if it's, sometimes it is 4 a.m. because I don't sleep a whole lot, like 4 or 5 hours, you know, 5 hours, I'm usually like golden.
Yeah.
That's just kind of how I've been. And so, you know, I'll get to bed at midnight and some days I'll wake up at 4 or 5 a.m. and it's like, I can't get, even if I want to, I can't really get back to sleep very easily. So like, oh, I'm just going to go jump in the tub and I'm going to go get a workout in or go for a run. And then I get done with that. Now I feel like I'm ready to take on the day and I've already won the day. It hasn't started yet for most people. And so I think just there's a lot of reasons why mentally, you know, building that fortitude and that strength and just that, you know, you're going to take control of everything that you gain from that. And so I just feel like also, I mean, it's crazy, even a crazy day at work or whatever's going on, like I just don't get nearly as stressed. And it also truly, like after I've done that, like there's nothing I'm going to do that day that's harder than that or less comfortable, or it's just, you know, you can do anything, you almost feel like. So I think it's a healthy practice for a lot of reasons, but the mental side is really what I'm after more than anything.
See, I so think do you do hot and cold, or you just do cold?
So I do, and I've played with that too. Like for a while, I was sitting in the hot tub for a while and then go in the cold tub. And that's kind of cool and interesting. At the beginning, I was working out first, then the hot tub, then the cold tub, but I was getting pretty bad headaches, like almost migraine-ish. One of my friends messaged me and said, "Hey, dude, don't do that. Do the cold tub first. Like you're getting all your blood vessels, you're getting all swole, and then you go on and shrink them in that cold tub. And that's where you're getting those headaches."
Oh, so you do the cold tub before you work out?
I do. In fact, now it's the first thing. I try and do it fasted. So when I wake up, do that first. And that, I haven't eaten anything and it seems to go the best. And it's been a little easier, which I'm not necessarily after the easy. It's more just, I mean, by the time I get out, what drives me out every time, it's my fingers and toes are just so cold, like they're steaming cold.
Frostbite,
like,
okay, is the word,
like,
I think you're
looking
for.
And that's my limit where I'm like,
hypothermia.
Okay, I got what I needed, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's not, I'm not at risk of hypothermia. I'm not in temperatures for like the time that that's going to happen for me. Like, and I've proven that, you know, myself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, 10 and a half minutes. It's like,
that's what you're in there for, 10 and a half minutes?
Wow. That's the longest I've done, but it's like, I've read a bunch of stuff, like 2 to 10 minutes, you're fine, you know, all these different things.
So how long have you been doing this for?
Maybe a couple months, I think. So what, you know, not that long. I mean, just as I knew, I was looking for a tub.
If you do it twice, that's long enough.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
So,
but I love it now. I crave it. I get excited to do it. You know?
Kind of like Pete and his runs.
That's right. I got to vouch for this a little bit here, because I think it's hilarious that you just happen to be on right now on the show, because this past weekend we headed off to Calgary for my brother-in-law's 40th birthday, and on the way back we ended up going to this Nordic spa.
Oh wow.
And they do the ice bath thing, except there they've got, it's pools because they have lots of people there.
Yeah,
and they've got hot tubs of different, like from 40 degrees all the way, you know.
Oh,
to
nice.
they have hot, warm, and cold. So that's their system that they have. You go in the hot, you go in the warm, so you slowly cool off your body, then you go in the cool, and then you go relax in front of a fire, just with a house coat and stuff like that. Very still outside. Nice. Right. So the hot tub, and I got that down, no problem. Saunas, no problem. I rock that out. That's all me. I got that every day.
Sure.
And then we saw the cool pool, and they had this little waterfall going into it. And there's 2 foot icicles off this son of a bitch. And my brother-in-law and I are looking at each other and be like, I'll go in if you go in.
Nice.
And it was no tippy toeing. Like, you are
right.
It's
right.
Like, okay, I got to get to that far end of the wall and I got to get underwater now.
Yeah.
And that's right. How it was. And it was like it's 2 degrees Celsius is what that pool was at. Holy shit. That was some cold stuff. So we're sitting there, you know, like all bundled up like this, you know, like I'm sure it felt like a minute, but it was only probably 20 seconds. And it was just like, how are you feeling? And be like, cold right now. And then, you know, 30 more seconds would go by me. How are you feeling? And be like, is it scary that I don't feel anything anymore? Yeah, I think I'm going numb.
Yeah.
And honestly, after that first minute was done, we ended up lasting. It was somewhere in between probably 5 and 10. So I would probably say most likely about, you know, realistically it was probably 6 or 7 minutes. Sure. And I was telling Kevin when I got back, like exactly how you're talking about, after I had done a few cycles of this, because after the first time in, again, I knew what it was going to be like.
Yeah.
I was so relaxed mentally, physically. And that was one time. And I went into it totally unbiased. I was like, well, I've heard lots about it. What does it hurt to try? And man, by the time I was done that day, I haven't felt that chilled out, pun intended, in a long time. Like, I had the best sleep of my life that night.
Yeah. Yeah.
The clarity that you're talking about too, like just sitting there, having a little bullshit session while we're sitting in front of the fire. There was no grogginess or anything like that. I mean, it was wow, is the only way I could explain it. I mean, and I told Kevin, I said, it would be interesting to know how you felt if you were able to do this every day or every other day, whatever, but on a consistent basis. I said, I wonder how good you would feel. And by the sounds of it, it does you pretty damn good. So
yeah, my body and my mind are they want it. They're craving it. Like I feel an urge that I need to go do that. I need to go do that. My wife, when I get home from work, or usually I'd like to get up early and do it, just depending on what's going on, had a crazy week this week. But so sometimes at the end of the day or evening, whatever, it doesn't really matter to me when I do it necessarily, but I think it's probably best. The other thing, it also gets your metabolism going. And so if you do it fasted in the morning before you eat anything, like it kind of gets your metabolism boosted up and ready to roll. So I think it probably does a little bit better for you to, you know, keep trimmed up a little bit. I mean, there's so many benefits besides just how I feel. I mean, just how I feel, I would do it anyways.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So do you, how many times a week do you do it?
It's been about an average since I started, about 5+, but I've been out of town multiple times for work. Mm-hmm. And then I had a funeral for a few days and I just don't have the tub anywhere to go do it. Yeah. So, but when I'm home, just about every day, I've been home.
So is that, Is that just a tub you have filled with water and it's just cold enough there?
It's
that
a cattle trough. I bought it at IFA, Intermountain Farmers. And I looked for a long time and I couldn't find it. I was going to have to order one. I mean, it took me like 3 weeks to like get my hands on the one I wanted, like five different places. Right. Finally found one that is, I want one big enough that my wife, she hasn't joined me yet. She said she's going to as it warms up just a little bit. But I wanted it big enough that a couple people could get in if they wanted to. And
yeah.
And so this was like a 300-gallon cattle trough, basically. But it's so cold here that, yeah, it freezes every night. And actually, when I first started the first week, it got so frozen, like it was almost like, I mean, there was barely enough room to put my legs under the side that I wasn't breaking out. Yeah. And I bought on Amazon this heater that I could plug in and put in, and it would warm it up to 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And I just let that go till the ice was almost gone. Then I pulled it out. I haven't had that back in because it's been kind of on and off warm enough that it just kind of keeps it cold. So I'll probably freeze some things up, you know, some big bowls of ice or something. I got a couple freezers here, you know, in the summer, and try and solve it that way. I got to figure that part out, how to keep.
That's what I was going to ask. Wintertime, so, it's Mother Nature's helping out. But yeah. If it's 30 degrees and a black trough to boot, right, is going to warm up.
Going to get the heat. Yeah.
So,
that
I'd part's be true. Curious how much ice you need to cool that off to where it's going to be.
I'll effective. Be finding out. So I'm probably going to buy some ice blocks or whatever, you know, but.
And you probably have to change the water each time. Cause if it's.
Yeah.
There,
yeah. Eventually for sure. And I put some salt and I have some chlorine tablets for my hot tub. I've done a few things just to kind of keep it. I think it's been fine so far, but I definitely drain it out. Places. I have done that, but
maybe just get an old deep freeze and fill it full of water, plug it in for a bit.
Well, there you go.
It's funny though that there's a lot of people that I was looking into doing that on YouTube. There's a bunch of people that do it that way. Actually, they caulk the seams on it, and that is literally what they do. They turn the temperature thing.
Just make sure you unplug it before you get into it.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, but it's I was a builder too, so I did construction. I'm gonna build a sauna too out by my hot tub.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Probably this spring and add that to the regimen. But actually, I was gonna tell you before. So at the very beginning, I was working out first, and I'd go on a trail run, and then I come back, and I'd sit in the hot tub, and then I'd go and sit in this cold tub, and it was giving me headaches. So then I switched that around, and now that I've got this order of it in a better shape, like you were doing by warming up slowly, Peter, I was taking a lukewarm shower after, but I mean, it was so, my fingers and toes were stinging so bad, like 15, 20 minutes. Like it was pretty miserable. I'm like, man, this is taking forever just to warm up. And so, and people said, well, don't get right in the hot tub. But actually now, like, honestly, I go right out of that cold tub, and I go right in my hot tub.
Yeah.
And it, within like 45 seconds, I feel great. Like it totally so that's been interesting. I don't know if it's bad or if I shouldn't be doing that. I don't know, but it's been fine. And now, I'm able to get back to normal and do whatever I'm doing without, you know, such a long transition period to get back to being warm. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I always comment on your, when you're doing it, I'm just like, oh man, you're freaking crazy. See you in the 4 o'clock in the morning. So did you, I guess you didn't, I guess it is the temperature. It is what it is. You have a little thermometer in there. It looks like that you're.
I do. I bought that on Amazon. I have a couple of them, but that one's a little bigger and brighter, but thermometer, it's just battery powered. So I just hit the button on it and it just takes temperature. I leave it outside. So it's already pretty close. And then I let it sit in the water while I'm getting stuff ready. And before I start breaking everything out, make sure it gets the right temperature. But it's been, I think 37 is about the highest it normally gets when there's any ice in it. It's normally 35 Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So probably 3 or 4 degrees Celsius, it seems like. So about right.
So that's crazy, man. Maybe I'll have to try it. I don't know. I hate being cold. I hate it.
I did too. But I love it. I hate it. I love
it. It's one more reason, Kevin, for you to come ice fishing up in the shack. We'll have the shack heated up.
There you go.
We'll tie a rope around you and I'll kick you in the water. And then I'll haul you out when you need to, when you start going blue or whatever. Be like, no, you still got a
walleye on, and then you're, I'll get you in a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. You just,
this fish in.
Here, you hang on to your own rope here.
No, I ice fished once. That's it. I'm good. I have about as much enjoyment ice fishing as you do running.
Oh, so, that's cool.
I told you can hold your bow while we're fishing.
it's too funny. Well, anyway, Mike, it's It's been fun chatting with you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me. It has been fun. And like I said, if I get up Kelowna way, I'll have to hit you up for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, man. My door is always open. Come up and we'll shoot some arrows. Come up in the summertime. It's a lot nicer than the winter.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe get out in the ocean on the lake and do some tubing or something fun.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. I would enjoy that. And do you guys ever get down to Utah or no?
Not very often, no. Like I said, we're pretty busy up here. And as soon as spring, I'm pretty slammed with hunting and the kids. And then summer rolls by. And it just seems, I don't know, just the year just seems to fly by. What I'd like to do is check out that Hunt Expo one year.
Yeah, you really should. You guys, boy, you'd love that. Or, the some of these like Total Archery Challenge or, different archery events, 3D courses. I mean, they have some not too far across the border from you that you might be able to get to.
Those tacks would be pretty cool to go to.
Oh, man. I always call it Christmas in July. The Total Archery Challenge is, I mean, that and the Hunt Expo were like, man.
Where'd you say it was next year, Kevin? Was it St. Louis?
No, that's the archery show. But it's kind of like a toss, the archery show. But then, like, when I was talking to Robbie, we had Robbie Denning on a couple weeks ago, and he was going off about the Hunt Expo. It's in Salt Lake City, which is not too far from where we are.
Yeah.
Easier to get to than St. Louis.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It'd be fun to go bring the wives down.
Yeah, I got direct flights on Delta from, I think they were. Were they direct? Maybe they weren't. Maybe I didn't get direct to Kelowna.
Oh yeah, you'd be able to fly directly from
Kelowna. Okay. Seemed like I did. It's been a few years, but Salt Lake's not too far away from you guys.
Yeah, and it's not. It wouldn't even be that bad of a drive, probably.
Thank me for it. I'll tell you what. You got to get down here to that Hunt Expo. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed like you're having a lot of fun down there when you're looking at your videos there.
Yeah, it's a great time. There's just all the, so many great people that are all together. And
I was going to ask you, you were wearing a shirt and you said, Rogan Haynes, we support you. What's that about?
Oh, yeah. So actually the Bow Rack in Oregon has shirts that they made, and it's Joe Rogan, Cameron Haynes, like it's a political party thing.
Oh,
it says Rogan Haynes 24, like to run for the president and the VP of the United States.
Awesome.
They did one in 2020 also, so I have that one too, but usually wear the 24 now because it's still coming out. So I'm just being funny because that was a big thing. Everybody's like, you guys need to run for office, get this country fixed up pretty quick,
That'd
be like getting Jim Shockey instead of Trudeau, right?
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we're signing off there. We kind of got sidetracked, but I like it. Okay, buddy. Keep in touch. And you got anything to add, Pete?
No, just thank you very much for coming on. It was a pleasure meeting you. And I'll be following you jumping into the ice waters there, seeing how that goes. All right.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go by a tub and I'll probably be swearing at you the whole time while I'm sitting in there. Yeah.
Bring it on, man. If you're going to cuss me out, I'd be happy for you to be doing it.
With a smile on your face.
Okay, thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Thanks again, everyone, for tuning into the Focus Hunting Podcast, coming at you as part of the Waypoint Outdoors production. Pete and I wanted to thank all you guys, the listeners, for tuning into the over past 100 episodes of the show. This journey has been a lot of fun for both Pete and I, and we couldn't do it without your guys' support, so we really value that. And you're going to notice a bunch of promo codes down in the show notes. Use them, save a bunch. Love you guys. Until the next time.